Hi, and welcome to Shadow Talk's weekly intelligence summary track, where our team of analysts dive into the top threat intelligence stories each week. To read their full findings and analysis, make sure to visit resources.digitalshadows.com. Now here's your host, Harrison Van Riper.
What's up, everybody? I'm Harrison Van Riper, and this is Shadow Talk, Digital Shadow's weekly threat intelligence and discussion podcast. We've got a sweet, sweet show today. We're going to do our normal rundown of this week's threat intel, and then we're going to talk a little bit about one of the blogs that one of our esteemed guests published this week about Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency. Also, as a kind of like a side programming note, we'll be taking next week off as it's the 4th of July here in the States, and I will most likely be outside by a pool, possibly with some barbecue, maybe a beer. But yeah, we'll be back the following week after that. So first up, joining me this week is Philip Doherty. Philly D, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, good, mate. Not too bad. How you doing?
Yeah, you know, not bad. Again, it's a week out from July 4th, so I can't really complain too much. So then also joining us is Alex Giriku. How are you doing, Mr. Ali G?
I'm doing pretty well. Good to be back yet again.
How's Zuko? Zuko's been eating the wall, listeners, in case you didn't know this.
Yeah, so he's in here in my office with me so I can keep a watchful eye on him.
That's good. So no more drywall eating.
Sort of, maybe.
Maybe he'll do more.
That's the idea, but yeah.
Yeah. And you were the author of the aforementioned blog, which we will talk about later on.
Yes.
All right. So first up, Philly, you wrote the main article this week, and it's all about the attacks against telecommunications companies by Chinese threat actors, namely APT-10. This was a pretty big story this week. So obviously it was a kind of like a main highlight for us. So why don't you dig into a little bit of what the main article is?
Yeah, for sure. So it was an espionage campaign that's been going on for around 18 months to 2 years that's been targeting telecommunications organizations around the world. So likely to attempt to harvest call detail records of individuals using their services, and it's named Operation Soft Cell. So as of yet, no one really knows who's behind it. It hasn't really been confirmed yet, but it's been determined that it's likely originating from some sort of Chinese state-associated threat group. So like its attribution, the motive isn't very clear either. However, there is an abundance of information contained within these call detail records that makes it a likely surveillance operation. So acquiring this information allows a threat actor to identify the user of a device, the location of the device, the phone number, the phone billing information, sort of the type of communication used. So it builds up quite a nice profile of the user. So if it was a state-associated group, then they'd have a good view of like who this individual was, who they were communicating with, and then whether they want to continue monitoring this person's specific activity. So to do this, the threat actor needed to gain an initial foothold and did so by using a modified version of this China Chopper web shell. And it executed it on something called an Internet Information Service server. So first, they needed to identify a suitable target. So they did that by footprinting or mapping, or sometimes it's called fingerprinting, out the structure of a system. So from there, they can then run remote commands and download sort of additional tools to help them. So the attacks came in four waves over the 18 months. And if the attackers were detected or an attack didn't work, they would simply just stop, so wait a little period of time, and then try a slightly different tactic again in another wave. So the first wave was likely either to attempt an intrusion or just to test out their methods, as it was largely identified and remediated. So after 2 months, then they began the second wave, a more targeted attack with modified web shells, and managed to actually get some information and exfiltrate some data on the user. But again, that was largely detected as well, and so on until the fourth wave. But the latter attacks were focused more on sort of obfuscation and persistence. So they used the likes of VPNs, and it was executed in a shorter time period. So we think that this is likely trying to get in before any mitigation steps were taken. So this coming on to the question now, sort of who was behind the attack and like attributing this campaign. So attributing it to a Chinese state-associated group is a logical thing, but initially the campaign was specifically attributed to APT-10. So there is a possibility that it could be them, as the whole intermittent attack frequency and the use of these third-party service providers, it kind of fits their behavior. and also like looking to find a wider exposure through these third-party services. It kind of reminds us a bit of the Operation Cloud Hopper that happened in 2017. But again, they were going after MSSPs instead of telecommunications companies. But it does kind of fit their methods of attack. But Chinese threat groups are, in this region, they are one region where tools and infrastructure is kind of commonly reused or shared between the groups. So for example, we mentioned this China chopper. It is thought to be exclusively used by Chinese groups, but several of those groups have been known to use it and execute it. Similarly, reports have referenced this Poison Ivy tool as one way to identify APT-10, but then this tool is publicly available on marketplaces and people can buy or rent it. So trying to attribute it to one specific group based on these tactics and tools, it doesn't always work out that way. Researchers can sometimes be too quick to sort of jump to a conclusion without more established indicators. Okay, one interesting thing to point out is how persistent the campaign was. So we hear a lot about the A, an advanced persistent threat group, especially how capable the group is and how sophisticated the tools that they use. But reports can often overlook the P. So lots of attackers would try and gain access opportunistically or move on if a targeted attack didn't really work out. But this threat actor likely had a plan in place. So they try one intrusion, wait a while to either completely avoid attribution or let this attention cool down about what they're doing, try again, if it didn't work, another little period of inactivity, and then keep repeating that process until they've successfully entered. So this kind of highlights another aspect of the TTPs of threat actors that reporters might not take as seriously as others.
Cool. Yeah, this has definitely had a lot of people talking this week. And yeah, I think like you very rightly point out, it's pretty hard to confirm attribution on this. And it kind of shows like why attribution is so difficult, because, you know, we don't have the insight. You don't have any video footage of them actually hands on keyboard or anything like that. So it, in some instances, it doesn't necessarily matter in terms of attribution, as long as you have kind of the motivations and stuff behind it. So I think that was kind of what the big takeaway was, rather than the, you know, specifically APT-10 or, you know, whatever other Chinese threat group, you know, was attributed to it. So, but yeah, no, super interesting stuff. So thanks for that, Phil. Remember, if you want to read the full intelligence summary, go to resources.digitalshadows.com. All right, so let's move into the highlights for this week. Alex, tell me about this new espionage campaign, Bouncing Golf. I want to hear what makes it so bouncy.
I don't think I have the answer for that question, but I do love the name of it. So what it actually entails is a new cyber espionage campaign that was seen targeting the Middle East. So threat actors used malicious code that was embedded in apps, which were masquerading as legitimate mobile apps. And so once they were opened, there was a spyware called Golf Spy that was automatically downloaded. And so the attackers seemed to be targeting military-related data alongside things like device and location data, as well as users' PII. And right now, it's not really known who was behind it, but there's a realistic possibility, and there's kind of some thoughts that it might be linked to the Iranian government, because there are overlaps with these tools and some other tools that have previously been used by groups like Domestic Kitten, which have been linked to the Iranian state.
Okay, so we don't know why it's so bouncy, but it's all right. We'll carry on. All right, so then Phil, the Turley Group has shown up again with some new TTPs.
So yeah, by now we've all heard of Turley, this Russian state-associated threat group, and they've demonstrated new tools, custom tools, different attack techniques, all spanning over three different campaigns. So the first campaign, we saw this new backdoor. It's called Neptune, and it targets Microsoft Exchange servers. So this, instead of actively listening, it passively listens for different commands and different instructions through that. Second campaign used an adapted version of the public Meterpreter tool, if I'm saying that correctly, and a custom RPC backdoor. And then finally, the third one included a custom RPC backdoor based on the public PowerShell runner tool. So two different modifications to publicly available tools out there. So Turley are quite good at this thing called living off the land, identifying different tools already out there and customizing, modifying them for their own sort of targeted attacks. And this just highlights their ever-increasing capabilities and just adding new tools to their arsenal.
All right. Thank you, Phil. All right. Then, Alex, wrap us up this week. So the geopolitical tensions between the United States and Iran seem to be causing some cyber actions.
So a few threat groups that are reportedly associated with the Iranian government were reportedly targeted by the U.S. Cyber Command, which is interesting because we don't typically see activity from the U.S. side of things. It's more so from the other perspective. And so as a result, kind of the tactics and tools as well as the techniques are right now undisclosed, but they were reportedly conducted in retaliation to one of the several recent likely geopolitically motivated attacks between Iran and the U.S.
Yeah, so definitely something to keep an eye on kind of moving forward. All right. Well, that will wrap up the threat intel for this week. Briefly, Alex, let's chat a little bit about your blog that you put out this week. It's all about Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency. You were kind of doing some research and had seen some typo squats come through Searchlight. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
So while doing some research, I came across a couple of domains that I thought were interesting because they were using the Libra and Calibra names within them. And so for those of you who don't know, Facebook just recently announced their new cryptocurrency called Libra and the associated digital wallet, which is called Calibra. And so those were announced both on the 18th of June. And since then, I was able to pull up a graph of kind of all the domains that were registered that used either the Libra or Calibra name within the actual domain name. And I came across some interesting results. So I guess it's to be expected considering how big Facebook is. But on and around the 18th, kind of the days after it, there was a huge uptick in the amount of domains that were registered using either of those names. And while most of those are pretty boring and they're just parked, not really hosting any content, I came across a couple that were either directly impersonating the Libra or Calibra websites, so essentially cloning them, and a couple of others that were hosting Libra-related scams or what appeared to be Libra-related scams. And so in my research, I was essentially just discussing the impact of when a company acquires a new brand or announces a new product, how quick cyber criminals and scammers are to jump on those kinds of big media events.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one thing to highlight also is that, you know, these weren't just like innocuous Calibra domains, right? Some of them were puny code domains that, you know, when you put it into the browser, it renders it and it looks nearly identical to the regular Calibra domain. And then also just some that were straight up like typo squat domains. So you know, there was one that was Canlibra wallet, I think was one of them. So one of them was libra-ico.org. Those were, you know, just obvious scams, but no, I think that they were, it was a really good kind of case study in terms of what, cyber criminals can do. Like you say, when a company either launches a new product or if they, you know, acquire a new company and maybe they're rebranding, maybe they're doing a new name, you know, something like that. All of these instances, you might not associate that with, you know, a direct cyber criminal activity, but this is definitely something that we see on a daily basis, kind of when we're going through Searchlight, you know, throughout for our clients and then also just in general. So no, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it really shows kind of how crafty some of these criminals truly are, how dedicated they are to their scamming operations.
All right. Well, that will do it for us from this week. Remember to go rate Shadow Talk on iTunes. And if you have any feedback, you can leave it there or you can email us at messages@digitalshadows.com. The question of the week this week, we'll make it a quick one because we're running out of time. It's officially summer here in Texas, and it is, as Alex can attend to, it is extremely hot. It's so humid. I walk outside and I get drenched in sweat. If you could have one ideal summer vacation, what would it be?
So I think you hit that one on the nose, Harrison. For me, it would definitely be somewhere where the temperatures are no higher than maybe 20 Celsius or, you know, somewhere in the mountains.
What is that Fahrenheit?
What is that, like 68? Yeah, 68.
Like
68. 80s? No, 80s is way too hot.
Okay. Oh, that's
yes.
Too hot for
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
That's true. You keep Alex keeps his apartment at a cool, crisp 67 degrees.
65
Fahrenheit
at night. During the day, tend to turn it off or set it to like 72 Fahrenheit or something.
I can't imagine what your AC bill is.
It could be lower.
All right, Phil, what would you do?
It's a good question. I don't know. As an Irish man who doesn't get much sun, I don't know. I've always wanted to do like shark diving in South Africa. But that's going to be hot.
Oh, my gosh.
That is going to be hot.
Yes.
So,
yeah. It is going to be hot. You got to bring the sunblock then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Five factors.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good. Shark diving in South Africa. All right. Well, you know, Christian is from South Africa. We could hook him up with you and
sort this out.
He'll know all the good spots. All right. Well, that's good. Those are two good answers. I think it's been quite a long time since I've actually not done like a working vacation. Apologies to like my current and former bosses that when I take a break, I'm only somewhat taking a break. So I think like my ideal vacation would be like disconnecting from everything and most of my technology. I mean, I still gotta have internet because I gotta watch Netflix. So that's an obvious given, but would like to be able to like reset myself. So going somewhere like in the mountains, in like a cabin or something like that, just like chilling by myself for a couple days. That'd be dope. That'd be sweet. I'd be down with that. And Netflix, obviously, myself and Netflix. All right. Well, that will do it for us for this week. Thank you, guests. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Texas Heat. We'll talk to y'all next week.